Hey, it's Greg. This is the Square Pizza Pod, cooked up by Sherm Co.
Thanks for coming back to another episode of the Square Pizza Pod. Today, Greg is in conversation with Dr. Monique Perry Graves, who is the Executive Director of Teach for America, North Carolina. In this episode, you will learn how she received the name Master of Analogies with her background in speechwriting, her new role within Teach for America, and how the switch to statewide strategy effectively empowers their network of leaders. Dr. Perry Graves is known for having a strong track record of visionary leadership and impact. Hope you guys enjoy this one.
Dr. Perry Graves, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Can't complain. Wonderful to have you on the Square Pizza Pod. Thanks for joining.
Thank you. It's nice to be had.
How's your week going? Wednesday already. How's your Wednesday going?
My Wednesday is going well. I am coming back from vacation, and so I am rested and have been ready to power through the week. So I'm catching my second wind to take it to Friday.
There you go. And where was vacation?
I was in Jamaica with a small group of girlfriends and a postponed trip. So it was my first time actually flying since the pandemic. The last time I had been on a plane was February 2019. And so, of course, I decided the first time I fly to do international. And so not just getting acclimated to the new way of being with COVID, but all of the testing and all the things to make sure you're safe and doing so, which is great. But I've gotten my full orientation. So I'm good to go decide to fly again.
It was pretty seamless, the checks and the balances and the protocols and everything else.
Yes. I think if you're comfortable with apps, it is great. I think if you like paper and printing out tickets and results and all of that, not so great. So I took full advantage of the suggested apps and everything worked fine.
You know, Dr. Daniel Velasco, our most recent podcast episode, he was getting ready to travel to, I think, Kenya for his anniversary. So it's either we're having a good luck interviewing people on the podcast or getting ready to travel, or it's just natural that people are trying to get out, you know, just kind of start traveling as things open up again.
Yeah. Testing the waters a bit.
I think that's smart. I think that's good. Well, welcome back. Glad you made it, you know, back in time for the podcast and everything else, but certainly looking forward to diving in today. You know, maybe a weird place to start, but some of our research, a few people told us you're a master of analogies. I don't know if it's fair to put you on the spot, probably not a good protocol to put you on the spot around like best analogies, but not something that comes up very often. So thought that was interesting.
I think that comes from my speechwriting background. So before I was in higher education, the initial start of my career, after I got my bachelor's degree in communications, was doing a lot of corporate communications and speechwriting. So, and I worked at that time for a major computer software corporation. So I always was focused on trying to translate what we, you know, saw as things that we could understand that were very technical into layman's terms. And so one of the tools I used a lot was analogies. And I think that just has stayed with me.
That's pretty good. So the natural follow-up is like, is there a favorite sort of speech or type of speech you often wrote in that corporate background experience?
I wouldn't say a favorite speech per se. I think myself and some of my colleagues at the time who were all fresh out of college would always challenge ourselves to see if we could take the most complex topic that people had a hard time understanding and make them, you know, understandable to someone who never knew anything about it. And so I think in hindsight, that also helped us think about how we were messaging beyond, you know, speeches and all kinds of things. But I don't think we realized that at the time.
Yeah, I'd imagine that's an incredible skill set that will and does continue to carry on today in your current role, but previous roles as well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I think it's tools in the toolbox. Yeah, 100%. And I think one other thing that came up that we loved in your background, you're one of the chief executives at a community college system. I would love for you to kind of tell us more about that experience and what that meant to you.
Absolutely. I am a education champion in general, but I'm definitely a champion of community colleges. I fell into the community college space, I would like to say by divine intervention after being in the private sector, but I started teaching adjuncts at a local two-year college at the prompting of a mentor while I was still in the private sector and completely fell in love with it. So I'll fast forward through some of the other details to that, but I completely fell in love with teaching adult students and just decided, you know, that I was going to make a run for it based on some job transitions and decided to go all in to the community college space. It connects so much to my desire for impact and the connectivity to economic mobility, but also the diversity of students and age and just that the community college stands for. So I really, really, really enjoyed my time in that space and was able to start in the classroom and then end up leading at an executive level after about 11 years. So it was great.
Yeah, I wondered too, you know, we've had conversations, you know, not necessarily with you, but with other contacts in our space. And I think there's a growing argument, maybe this was true pre-pandemic, but even now in the past few years, that community college arguably could be the best return on investment as you look at higher education than maybe a traditional four-year, you know, Ivy League, non-Ivy League, HBCU, non-HBCU. Wonder if that resonates with you at all.
Absolutely. I think it's a both and. So one of the, I think the beauties of the community college is that it's so robust in its ability to offer things that meet people where their needs are. So the community college that I worked at had a very strong, and many community colleges do, early college dual enrollment program. So it allows students in middle school and high school to take community college courses. They can earn credentials where if they don't decide to go to a four-year institution, they can come out and make a good living for their families and contribute to society. If they decide to go to a four-year college, it can help to alleviate some of the costs because then they're able to go in with credits and with things of that nature. And I know that community colleges are working to continue to build transfer and articulation agreements that make that more smooth. But I think that just in general, in some cases, people don't know the level of training you can get at a community college and what their earning potential truly is in that. So as I see more and more lifted up about the community college space, it makes me excited. Yep. But I think that if you want to do a little bit of both, that's good. But if you want to go the community college route, there are lots of options too.
I wonder too, if when you were at York or just what you saw in the market, right? Because oftentimes in our experience, if I am a high school senior talking to high school seniors, if you pitch a community college or the benefits of it, it may unfortunately not have the same kind of positive reaction, right? As a more traditional four-year path. So I'm wondering if you guys did anything differently or if you've seen promising kind of strategies in the market to help kind of bring new innovations and new light to how high school seniors or just working adults should be perceiving community college.
Absolutely. So we did a couple different things. First, I think, you know, marketing, messaging, recruitment, getting the word out about community colleges and not just to the high school seniors, but to other what we would call key influencers. So high school counselors, high school teachers, and parents. Dispelling myths about the type of faculty. So a lot of people don't know that the same level of credentials that one would require if they were teaching at a four-year school in a particular discipline would be required of that same faculty member in a community college. And many teach at both or have taught it at both. I think in other cases, sometimes people aren't aware of the plethora of majors. And community colleges also have growing programs what we call apprenticeships, where when you start your major, you're able to go ahead and go to work from the beginning. So you're getting paid on the job training while you are getting your degree or credential. And in many cases end up, you know, becoming permanently employed or are able to really leap into something that could be quite lucrative for someone. So that's a couple things. One of the signature programs I led before I left was inspired by the state of Tennessee. We launched a Reconnect program. There's a lot of national research that talks about many adults, working adults, have attempted at college but don't have a credential or degree. And so we did some very deliberate work to put together a campaign and strategy to attract adults back who had been at the college in the past but had not completed their studies. And that was very successful and I believe still goes on at the college today.
That's great. I love that approach, especially families, but being strategic about who kind of the amplifiers are and the key influencers to those working adults or high school students to get to them, really help them understand the options strong community colleges can provide.
Absolutely.
So, you know, there's obviously a lot before and after that, but kind of jumping to, I think, your current day to day, unless something's changed, but congrats on the new role as executive
director. I'm still here.
Perfect. Good. Came back with a job, even better. So tell the people kind of your, you know, your current role within sure. Teach for America and kind of what you've been accomplishing as you've landed here.
Sure. Well, I'm very, very, very excited to be able to lead Teach for America's efforts for North Carolina as we move to what we refer to as a state operating model. Mm-hmm. For those that know, or kind of a reorientation to those that don't know, North Carolina is one of the founding regions for Teach for America. So North Carolina has been connected to the Teach for America movement since its inception a little over 30 years ago and started in Eastern North Carolina.
Sure.
Yeah. And so over the years, North Carolina has had two affiliates, Eastern North Carolina, which is the Triangle East, and Charlotte Piedmont Triad, which is Greensboro to Charlotte. And so over the past year, the organization decided to align both of those affiliates under one statewide executive director. We still definitely are remaining close and deeply connected to our local programmatic regions, but are now operating as one statewide entity. So that birthed the creation of an expanded statewide executive director role. And here I am.
I appreciate that context. And for others, you've been in the role how long again now?
I've been in the role a little over 100 days-ish. That's why I don't know.
Perfect. And I imagine you're getting a warm welcome across North Carolina, I hope to say.
Yes, I think one of the things that was particularly attractive to me about this role, there were several things, is I'm from the state, so I grew up in the Triangle area. My parents still live in the Triangle area. My family, both sides of my family, are from the Eastern North Carolina rural part of the state. So I've spent many, many summers and holidays there. And then I have an adult son that lives in Greensboro that graduated from North Carolina A&T. And then I live in Charlotte. So I had the whole kind of state covered before I knew this job was going to come up. So it's been really exciting to be able to connect with all of the champions and key stakeholders that support Teach for America, but then reconnect with people that I know professionally and personally in this different context. It's been very exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, for those not familiar, you know, with, I think, with the normal or previous model of TFA, you know, we'll let them kind of Google it, but to catch everybody up, the statewide model is new, right? It's emerging. It's not one that they started with. I think from our own background, other regions across the country are emerging statewide, but even for a second outside of Teach for America, like we know KIPPS and some larger CMOs and some other nonprofits are also kind of merging statewide as well from a previous kind of single site program and whatnot. So curious, like, as you know, yourself as an executive leader and also leading the role now, like the strategy behind the statewide and what you all are hoping to accomplish with this new strategy.
Sure. I think that as organizations mature, I think one of the great things, and it's been a pleasure in this role, is that there have been numerous leaders since the inception 30 years ago across the state that have led the individual regions and advanced the movement to the point where even a statewide model could be considered. And so, because it's something that's very deliberate, you know, in a decision that was made, and you have to be positioned, you know, for success. You don't just want to move to a model that you're not successful in doing. So I think that the foundations laid by the many folks that preceded me helped advance the organization in that space. But I think that part of the reason why you're seeing that is that while we are unique and there's nuances to the communities, a lot of our work is deeply connected on a statewide level from a strategy perspective, from a governmental affairs perspective. And so I think it just makes sense to unite operations and affiliates in that way and have a leader that can be positioned to lead the state in that type of way. It's not necessarily something you have to do, but I think if your organization matures and it's grown to certain points, you're well positioned to consider doing so.
And knowing TFA is a pretty intentional organization, guessing there's been some high quality wins of other regions that have merged statewide as a guidepost for North Carolina or others that are certainly or slowly moving into that model as well. Is that fair to assume?
Yes. Yeah, so we're in the early stages. So right now there's four states that have a multi-region model under one ED. Okay. I would say the one that's a little, that's closest to us would be my colleague in Florida. They're a little bit ahead of us in that, but
that's
I think
Lakeisha
that
Wells.
As we've seen, I'm sorry.
That's Lakeisha, right?
Yes. Lakeisha Wells Palmer.
Lakeisha Wells
And so as we've seen some of the successes come there, but then also just you know, the pragmatic of operationalizing it. So it's not just the successes as it relates to the impact, which is great and what we want to lead with, but we also want to make sure that we're able to cultivate operations in a way that we're able to continue to sustain the impact and the wins, but also continue to build the community and culture among staff, because that is a different model and a larger model among staff that we know will continue to keep their contributions impactful as well.
It's exciting. You know, again, Dr. Velasco, we just had from Latinos for Education, they have not necessarily statewide, but a dual focus where it's both, they have an aspect of the organization focused on policy, which I think you said this new statewide mm-hmm. model allowed them to, but then also programmatically day to day, they're still supporting teachers on the front lines in classrooms. Absolutely. And so it's not easy for any organization or a new one to do both, but the ones that can combine it allow, I think, draw a really direct line between, is this policy really going to help kids and students, or is this just kind of fodder floating around in the Capitol somewhere?
Absolutely. And I think it's also important to understand, so we still have, you know, what your staff presence is and what your community presence is. So we still have individuals located throughout the state that will continue. I traverse the state and try to fit in family visits on the tail end of professional meetings as I'm up and down the highway. So I think that's a big part of it. And I also think that it's definitely a more effective approach when the mission alignment is there across the organization, because there's natural things that you're already on, you know, similar ground about. It's just really putting the pieces together.
And as an alum, guessing this hasn't changed too much within the walls of TFA, but there's probably some pretty clear goals you all are hoping to achieve within the statewide strategy. Wondering if you can share any of those that are top of mind for you all.
Sure. So this particular year, since the strategy started at the beginning of our fiscal year, the primary goal was really making the structure a reality, which we've made some significant gains on that. Combining the structure, bringing people into the structure as we need more capacity as we're leading at a statewide level is a goal. A couple other goals that I'll mention is we are really working to harness the strength of our alumni network and really take that to another level using the statewide model. And so we're really, really excited about some of the strategies that we have in place. And I've been really emboldened by the conversations I've been able to have with alums across the state. One area in particular that I'm excited about and particularly interested in is as we continue to offer development opportunities to our alums, coaching opportunities, network opportunities, really honing in on providing some elevated level of development for our alums that are now getting to more senior levels in their careers and their life cycles, not just at a district and school level, but individuals like yourself or others that are leading nonprofits. So we have a lot of alums that are in the ecosystem, if you will, of the work or influencing the work. And as they are progressing in their life cycle, we've got some exciting ideas and innovations in store to help support that.
It's cool. And I think one of the benefits of Teach for America, not everybody agrees, but you and I probably can, since we're having the conversation now, but just the power of the network, whether they necessarily stay within a classroom, our school leader, are running an education-based nonprofit, but then hiring TFA alums, the levels of support and just the actual number of alums across the country is reaching, I think, a really an exciting tipping point.
Yes. And I think that's something that sometimes as I'm out across the state that I have to remind people of. In North Carolina, we have close to 2,200 alums. And I think that's a conservative number because we have people moving to the state on a regular basis. I'm sure that's a little bit more than that. And so just some of the levels of the impact, just even in our state, is huge when we think about the investment that's made in our core members and what that turned out to be. Even though the majority of our core members do stay in the classroom beyond their 2 years, we are definitely making systematic impact and want to continue to support our network in doing so. Another thing I forgot to mention was another really big goal that I know that someone that you know well connected to is really continuing to tell those stories and amplify the work of our alums and our core members in the classroom and about our impact. So you'll be hearing more and more from us, as will those across the state, as we just spotlight the great things that are being done to help move education and kids' success forward.
I don't know if it's appropriate to do a performance review on said person now, but hopefully that person's doing a good job telling those stories.
He is doing a fantastic job. Said person's doing a fantastic job.
All right. Said that person, maybe he'll get this feedback at some point. So I think a part of those stories though, right? And correct me if I'm wrong, but it is around student achievement data, which can be polarizing for some in education and some not. And I could go back and forth. Well, I take that back. I feel very strongly I'm on one end of the spectrum, but can maybe empathize on other end of the spectrum. Tell us kind of how TFA moving forward in North Carolina is thinking about student achievement data.
Yeah, so I think we're right now kind of still in the period, which I think we're going to be emerging from it with COVID and a lot of the suspension of what the traditional, you know, data that would come out about students is due to the nature of the impact of the pandemic.
Yep.
We do know there's elements of achievement data that we feel may not properly represent truly what's going on in the classroom. We also know that there may be components that we can leverage and add to present a fuller picture. And so what my vision is going forward is we kind of continue to unite both of those things in a way where we know there's standard data that we can get access to, that we know that we can get on a regular basis, but we also know that there are particular parameters and measures that we know are tried and proven and maybe more equity focused that we can marry to that for a full picture. So we'll be continuing to hone in on that as we start to see more data come back online more frequently based on, you know, the pandemic and where we are.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think for us, it's always a yes and conversation. Mm-hmm. Data Absolutely. Can be polarizing, but not necessarily, you know, for us, it's never white and black, but it's kind of always in the middle in that sense of how important it is, but it's not the silver bullet in any means, correct, high or low. But the organizations we admire the most are the ones that acknowledge data, good or bad, you know, mm-hmm, quantitatively. And then of course, look at other factors and other variables to really understand how effective an organization and those connected to the organization are.
Absolutely. Another one of my analogies I use when I talk about this.
Okay, no, perfect. I knew it was going to be one. It took 24 minutes, but it came
we
out.
We don't have to good. Throw the baby out with the bathwater. So.
There you go. Yep. 100%. All right, perfect. We're on a roll now. So, you know, speaking about data, and we could go deeper there, but also knowing it's coming from teachers. And just today, I believe Charlotte Mecklenburg announced Friday or Monday is now going to be a new work day for staff, just amongst mm-hmm. a number of things. But mm-hmm. I think knowing how much teachers and school leaders are going through right now, mm-hmm. you know, over two and a half years of COVID, wondering if Teach for America as an organization, particularly you in North Carolina and your staff, are doing anything to support teachers in addition to normal services. But what's new and emerging that you all are doing to support teachers throughout COVID?
Absolutely. So one thing I can say, and I cannot take credit for this, but when I came into the role, a lot of the qualitative data and surveys that we had coming in from our core members in the state were some of the highest levels of them reporting their feelings of support mm-hmm. and engagement with Teach for America and their coaching staff and their program. And our retention numbers at the start of this year were high. So I feel confident that the organization definitely leaned in and pivoted in support of teachers. And in many cases, it's the safe spaces, it's being able to provide the resources and support, whether that's with classroom management strategies or lesson planning or equity work, whatever that looks like, because it's different for teacher leaders in the classroom versus our district and school leaders. But I feel confident that what we're hearing is that the deepened levels of support, which are different depending sure. on the core member, depending on the alum, have worked for us. We know we want to do more, but we're really focused on retention. We know, and you know, you mentioned CMS, that we know that teachers, and I've had conversations, you know, confidential conversations with district and school leaders. Mm-hmm. I've had these same conversations with some of my higher ed colleagues in leadership, where I think just in education overall, with some of the other, you know, circumstances, the pandemic and some of the other pressures, it has folks questioning whether they can sustain. I think burnout is real as well. And so it's my hope and our continued desire and focus on continuing to lift people up and reminding people to take good care of themselves and providing them the resources to do so.
Yeah, knowing it's variable and could range on the spectrum, are there any emerging themes around what staff members are seeing or need in terms of what they want in order to be retained, to not only make it, but to thrive this year and be excited to come back next year?
Sure. So I think this is always going to be the answer to a question about teacher retention. It's not a silver bullet, but we need to pay our teachers more. Mm-hmm. We need to pay our teachers more. And I know there's a lot of factors that feed into that, and Teach for America does not determine salaries right. when we pay salaries. But I think in times like this, when people are experiencing financial struggles outside of the classroom and the pressure inside of the classroom, the compounding of that is a lot. That's a lot for any professional.
True.
And so I think that's most important. I think whatever strategy that we can employ outside of teaching, where, you know, some of the support staff shortages have caused teachers to have to pick up duties or do things that are, you know, outside of the realm of what they would normally be doing. I think really paying attention to that and what those asks are and the necessity of those asks. I know our school leaders are doing the best that they can because they're pitching in too. Mm-hmm. But I think in the long term, we have to really look at that, because sometimes it's not always pay. I mean, pay is an issue, but sometimes it's not always pay. Yep. As it relates to that. And I think that's why you're seeing these times off, these teacher work days and things like that. People need some time away, but it's a deeper rooted issue.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you guys are well positioned to support both teachers and the policymakers to get it right. But also, to your point, yes, money, but yes, and right. Going back to what we said, and even our team doing one of our first projects was around teacher retention in a cohort of 5 schools, and money bubbled up. But a lot of times it was like, if I have a planning period, I want to know it can't be interrupted if I need a cover for a sub, right?
Absolutely.
I want to know that, like, I have a chair to sit down in, or like time to go to the bathroom in between mm-hmm. classes, like kind of normal human professional expectations that we know, working in challenging schools or just understaffed schools, mm-hmm. those basic necessities aren't always available to you as a teacher.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What should people do, or how can they kind of support Teach for America, specifically in North Carolina, as you're embarking upon your 101 days and the new strategy across the state?
Well, I would say, you know, whatever on an individual basis, so your local school, you know, whatever that looks like, I think whatever you can do to pitch in, help, if you know someone looking for, you know, employment, definitely pay attention to how you can support teachers and leaders at this time. Obviously, Teach for America is a nonprofit organization, so if you are open to donating to our efforts, we are always accepting generous donations of any amount to support our efforts, so we continue to deepen that impact across the state. And I would say continue to keep up with us. So whether it's your podcast or other places that you may see and hear from us, and share the story and impact, we are always looking for individuals that want to join the movement, whether that's in financial support, whether that's individuals that are graduating from college that may be interested in applying. So all of those things we need as we're working to achieve our mission and doubling our impact by 2030.
That's great. I heard you say 2030 at the end. So there's a pretty clear time horizon on some of those goals.
Yes. So our goal is to double our impact in our communities by 2030. And so while our bread and butter that many people know us for is recruiting tremendous teacher leaders, some of the conversation that we had earlier about our alumni network strategy and some of our other work, we know it's going to take a more robust strategic plan to advance to that doubling of impact. It's not just going to happen one particular place. Mm-hmm. And so that's the stake of the ground that we've collectively put in our working to advance.
When you say double impact, is there a clear number of terms, like number of teachers, number of alums, both, that you are looking to hit by 2030? Just curious if you guys have that yet.
So I would say that there's not a particular number of alums we want to see or a number of teachers we want to see per se. We do have goals or kind of metrics around that. I think we're more back to our data conversation. So what is the community impact? What is the economic mobility impact? What are some of the achievement impacts? Where we see where Teach for America is present, how things are different. And so that's going to be relative and be different according to what metric, but there's several metrics associated with that.
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, Dr. Perry, I want to pivot a little bit, because outside of your day-to-day, you know, you're an incredible person and have a a great background and really dynamic background. But I'm guessing it always hasn't been easy, or today, Wednesday, always hasn't been easy. And, you know, a lot of the work and talk we do here on the podcast is just around leaders, what make leaders great and as humans, but also leaders and people. Mm-hmm. Wondering if you feel comfortable telling us about your favorite professional failure.
Favorite? I have many failures. I would say there's two that come to mind. So there was one, I wouldn't say it was a failure. I would say it was a disappointment that really wasn't a disappointment. So I, coming out of undergrad, was in an internship program called En-ROADS for minority college students. I'm for minority college students. I'll get that out. Mm-hmm. And part of that process is, after you go through their screening and they designate you, you're interviewing with a lot of different companies that have chosen to take on En-ROADS interns. And so there was one particular company that I won't name that I really, really wanted to be at because of my friends being there. So there were a couple of my friends who had graduated prior to me. They all worked there. So I really wanted to work there and because my friends were there. And there was this other company that was really, really interested in me that there was one of the, this would have been the first group of interns placed there. So it was myself and several others. And I got an offer from the company that was not the one that my friends worked at. And I was so devastated, so upset. I did not want to take the job. I didn't decline the job, but I just remember having conversations with my parents. And so I did take the role, and it was the best opportunity ever. I mean, it was the springboard, and it had nothing to do with the company. I just wanted to be with my friends. Yep. And so that was a lesson in, yes, you want to belong and connect, but you always have to be open to new opportunities and not afraid of the unknown and be willing to embrace that. So that was a early kind of miss, but ended up working out. I would say the second thing is more a mindset. I think that over the years, I really had to be intentional about taking the time to recognize the pace of my work. I'm a thinker. As someone that's an academic, so you're kind of trained to see patterns and to come to conclusions quickly. So in my mind, I could come to a conclusion and see something really far out, but giving myself the permission to not have to execute on that right away. And so I think in some cases, I've had situations in the past where I may have led an initiative or been part of an initiative or project that was successful, but maybe not as successful that I thought it should be, because I had this super kind of high standard for what that looked like. I think high standards are important, especially when you're in service of kids in education. But I think sometimes I have to calibrate myself on that. And so I've learned to do that over the years.
You mean when working with other humans, just saying one thing by a certain date and getting everybody on the same page isn't the easiest thing in the world to do?
Am I reading between the lines there? But you know, it can be. And I think also I've had to learn, and this has come over the course of really great leadership teams that I've been privileged to serve. I'm very much an idea person. So when I was leading at the college, when I would go to a conference, my leadership team would be like, oh no, she's coming back from a conference. You can have all these ideas. So one of my staff had to say, look, like, we know you have a lot of ideas, but don't tell us. So it wasn't like I was coming back saying, do all the ideas. I would just want to talk about all the ideas at one time. And so they were like, can you just put that in an idea folder and like, we can talk about it. So that was funny. So I have an idea folder. And so I just bring the ideas out strategically versus like if I come back and I'm talking for hours about 10 or 15 ideas.
Sounds like a good learning lesson for everybody, both you and the team. But also, you know, when you say the word pace, that makes me think of urgency, right? And so much can be friendly, urgent and professional urgency. But of course that urgency, right? It's a word that can mean something very different from me to you, to the rest of the team. Absolutely. And as leaders, right, I have to kind of define what's a healthy urgency and what's maybe unhealthy urgency, while I think keeping those goals in mind about what can be accomplished, knowing humans have to help us accomplish those goals.
Absolutely. And I think it's also particularly, I remember reading, I think it was a Harvard Business Review article about this, that, or maybe the Atlantic, where it talks about when you're in mission centric organizations, or you're personally connected or feel like it's your calling, sometimes work doesn't feel like work. Mm-hmm. So that energy and that urgency is a very natural, like your engine just gets revs up differently. Yep. And you have to be really, really conscious of that. So I think that's also a big part of it. I also think when, you know, as I mentioned, when you're in service of kids, when you're in education, there are some things that can't wait to be addressed. And so I think it's a delicate balance and integration to do that.
And knowing you spent so much time in education, you know, within the quote unquote system and now leading different and having different leadership roles in the system, what sort of advice would you give to people working in education?
It may seem like it's worth it, but it is. I would also say, so one of the things that I would do, because just being real as a leader, like every day is not rosy. It doesn't mean you don't love your job.
No, come on.
What? So newsflash.
What? Somebody should have told me.
Yeah.
No idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that it is important to have your pick me up. So one of the things that I would do as a leader when I was in the community college space, when I got out of the classroom, I missed the classroom so much, but I appreciated the leadership role I was in because I was able to impact more students. So if I made a decision, it could affect the whole entire college population of thousands versus just the classroom, right? So everybody makes their impact differently. And one of the things I would do is I kept emails that my students sent me. I had a bulletin board. I would put them in a folder, you know, I would read. So when I had those days where I kind of felt like I was far from what it really was about, those are super helpful to me to kind of bring that back. So whether it was a thank you message or a note or seeing the success of a student, I think you always have to keep those reminders in front of you because if not, you know, bad news travels faster than good news sometimes. So a lot of times you end up addressing some of the challenges, which is what leaders are supposed to do, is problem solve, and some of the goodness may not always be top of mind in those seasons. So that would be my advice, and also get into it for the right reason.
It's great to you being able to acknowledge what you need as a human to not check out, but just take a breather and kind of reset, right? When days mm-hmm. or meetings are tough, and then also giving space for team members to do that as well, knowing that's how high functioning organizations often operate.
Absolutely. And everybody needs something different. I just think it's always important to think about what brightens your day, you know, what makes mm-hmm. your day in that regard. Sometimes I would have my staff at, back at that time, like put on my calendar some of our campus events or tour. So I wouldn't do the tour because, you know, as a leader, it's like, why is she here? So I had to tell them that I'm not here to, you know, inspect. I just want to see some students or see some people that are excited about coming, or I've walked the halls. And so we're in this kind of period now where we're mostly virtual, but that's one of the things I'm particularly looking forward to as I'm out more and more in the community and in classrooms. And, you know, we're able to, as the pandemic progresses and hopefully in the right direction, be in community with people and have those moments.
Yeah, and sometimes that's maybe an unwritten pro of being in education or being closely connected to schools. If you get tired of adults or need a break, usually there's a classroom of kids not too far away you can go hang out in and be surrounded by them instead of more adults.
Yes, absolutely.
So of course, speaking of kids, joy and maybe cafeterias or maybe not, but curious what Square Pizza reminds you of.
My Friday night date night.
Okay. So with my Tell husband. Us more. Keep going.
So one of my practices since being in this role, you know, it's always a family decision, and I am a COVID bride. So I got married a little over a year ago in COVID. Congrats. And thank you. And so one of the things that I kind of put in place is on our Friday afternoons, that's our date night. So it's either tacos or pizza. Mm-hmm. And we have a favorite pizza spot that has Square Pizza. And two times out of the month, I get my favorite Jenny's ice cream.
Perfect. That sounds like a night.
Yes. And I'm excited about it every week. Even though I know what the choices are in advance.
You ever need a third wheel, let me know. I'll pop up and have some pizza and ice cream. It'd be good.
It's the little things. It doesn't change.
That's right. Want to give you the final word, Dr. Paragraves. Any final words or thoughts you want to let the audience know about you or the work?
Well, first, I want to thank you for having me. You've been extremely generous to us at Teach for America, and we're proud of you as well. One thing I'll say is that this is a very interesting time for us in education. While there are many things that have changed, the needs of our schools and our kids in education have not. And so I challenge everyone to think about what they can do on an individual basis to support what we need in the schools, what our children need to get a basic education, because we know that from a cycle perspective, the education is the foundation to so many things. And so whatever that looks like for you, I challenge you to consider that. And we are always welcome to have you join in with us at Teach for America and contribute in any way that we may be able to partner with folks with. So we're very, very excited to be able to partner across the state and make impact and look forward to the future.
That's awesome. We'll certainly put, you know, you guys' website and some of those opportunities for folks to engage online and follow you along and donate all their money to support the cause.
All the money.
In the new role. thanks so much for joining the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great.
Thanks so much for checking out the Square Pizza Pod, making a few selfish requests. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps spread the word about the podcast, and share this with a friend. We appreciate it. Thanks.